Evan Studio this morning. Ken Welsh, president of Coalition for a Better Wallingford. We have Jen Short. She's the co-founder of the Coalition. We have a pharmacist who was the Connecticut Pharmacist of the Year at one point and is on the board of directors of the Coalition, Ernie Mrazek. We have Craig Turner, who is the director of Wallingford's Youth and Social Services. And we are so honored to also have the mayor of Wallingford, Bill Dickinson, in our studios. And we'll have a couple of guests on the phone as well. But we say good morning to all of you.
Good morning,
Dan.
Now, we've had Ken on before. So, Ken, we're going to start with you, first of all. How did you get involved in all of this, and how did the opioid crisis affect you?
Well, it affected me personally. I'm going to defer to Jen very, very quickly here, because we lost my stepdaughter, her daughter, as a result of an overdose death. A lot of what we're going to talk about early on is how we were blindsided by it, how the town was blindsided by it. And after the shock, the response to that shocking news, it's impossible to recreate those emotions at a level that people can understand. Unless you've experienced it, there's no way that I can share that. So I'm going to defer to Jen right now. Let her explain that moment in time and how this happened. Because without that driving force behind this, as we know, all the things that we go through today, it's very easy to lose focus. 5 years later, we're more dedicated to this than we ever have been. So
Jen, go ahead.
Jen, tell her story.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us on the show this morning.
You're welcome.
This is very near and dear to me, but not only to me because of losing my daughter, Taylor, but to the entire Wallingford community. 5 years ago, when I got that call from the New Haven Police Department, it was more than just a wake-up call for me personally, but it was a wake-up call for the Wallingford community. We, after Taylor's services, sat in our living room, and the young adults that were present at the time started naming not one, not two, not six, not 12, but over 30 names of their peers between the ages of 18 and 25 that had passed away from an accidental overdose in just Wallingford in our community, Dan.
Within what time frame?
That was within a three-year time frame. We lost 53. After going to the coroner's office and getting statistics, we lost 53 young adults in 2010, 11, and 12. Taylor, my daughter, being one of
those
53.
How old was Taylor?
She was just 20, just graduated from high school, looking forward to going to college and living life like all of those other 53 young adults.
Did you have any idea how she was exposed to this?
I didn't. Initially, we did attend some of her peers' funerals, so we had those talks as a mother and daughter, and we sat around the table discussing over and over the issues at hand and what is happening. Unfortunately, as any young adult going out with their peers and living life, I think she really thought that it wasn't ever going to affect her, and that incident, that party she attended where she purchased what she thought was cocaine, it was heroin. And unfortunately, the heroin that she purchased was not heroin, but it was morphine and fentanyl. And that evening, with her boyfriend, they snorted it, and when they went to bed that night, Taylor did not wake the next morning.
Mr. Mayor, talk about how this crisis has transformed the municipality of Wallingford.
Well, there's no question about the terrible tragedy with just told to us by Jen and so many others. What's very disturbing about the opioid crisis is the unsuspecting nature of it. The town of Wallingford for decades has had a Red Ribbon Week, and urging young people to stay away from drugs and alcohol and make good decisions. And to find out that within the structure of what we should trust, within the structure of what is legal, so many people have become addicted to medications that at times are improperly prescribed, but at times the medical providers are not familiar enough with the addictive nature of these drugs. The drug companies encouraged writing the prescriptions. So in the midst of a community, a legal, governmental message to young people, stay away from these things, right under our noses, we were encouraging the use of opioids. Mm-hmm. And now that it's known, and the other sad thing is this, it was really known in 2006, 2007. I think 2006 was the prescription monitoring program was adopted by the state of Connecticut. And yet the message hasn't gotten out, and that's what really disturbs me. So many are in this queue of having responsibility, including the national agencies, the Drug Enforcement Agency, the Justice Department of the United States. Cases were brought in 2006, 2007, convictions obtained with regard to activities of drug manufacturers. And yet it hasn't, to the extent necessary, become known to everyone. We all are affected by this. And
no question.
We've got to be aware.
Okay, we're going to get back to our guests in just a moment. Let's get an update on traffic on this Wednesday morning from Cindy Waitman. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning, Dan. We are starting out with a crash on 84 eastbound, past exit 41 as you approach Park Road. Left lane is out. Delays now back to Finneman Road. Westbound side of 84 is slammed past the Bulkley Bridge. Southbound 91 is backing up from 291 down through I-84. And 9 North, you've got delays through the Arrigoni Bridge stoplights. Route 8 South earlier spin out was cleared from the ramp to 84. And on Route 6 eastbound by Sycamore Avenue, we have a closure in the area because of a transformer fire. Just follow local detours. And this report is brought to you by the Ad Council and Meals on Wheels America. 1 in 6 seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at americaletsdolunch.org. I'm Cindy Waitman, back at 7:34 with your next traffic check on the Talk of Connecticut.
Juniper Home Care wants to know, do you or someone you know live with a person over the age of 65 who needs assistance with activities of daily living? Are you their primary caregiver? If so, you may qualify for compensation for your tireless, committed care. Juniper Home Care is pleased to offer a family caregiving program which will train you, provide nursing support, 24/7 office overview, and even pay you. See how you may qualify for compensation for taking care of a loved one inside your own home. Learn more at juniperhomecare.com or call them at 860-523-1418. Juniper Home Care Family Caregiving Program, because the best caregivers are family. juniperhomecare.com. Must be 65, on or eligible for Medicaid, and live in the same home.
Worry less with Liberty Mutual Insurance.
So your son got home safe last night? Tom said he had a flat tire.
Yeah, he was out past curfew and got stuck on Route 1, but Liberty Mutual went out and took care of it for him.
Liberty did what?
Yeah, a flat, jump, or tow. It's no problem no matter where or when with their roadside assistance.
What was he doing out so late anyway?
Getting himself grounded for a month.
Visit us online to get a quote. You can leave worry behind when Liberty stands with you. Liberty Mutual Insurance. Optional 24-hour roadside assistance coverage. Coverage is underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company.
And welcome back to Brad and Dan, a special broadcast today as we focus on the opioid crisis in our country, in our state, in one of our municipalities. But before we get back to our guests, I want to talk about Woodland Auto Body in East Hartford. Because if you ever get into an auto accident, you need to put together a checklist. And here's an accident checklist put together from Wilden Auto Body in East Hartford. After an accident, quickly determine if your vehicle is safe to drive. Never operate an unsafe vehicle. That's rule number one. And don't wait to determine who and where to go to have your vehicle repaired, how long the body shop has been in business, and where their reputation and what their reputation is all about. I mean, the reputation is an important factor. There's no doubt about that. Know your insurance rules and regulations. You know, you're not required to get more than one estimate. Did you know that? When going over your estimate, look at what is included, not just the amount. Get help with your claim. And let Woodland Auto Body help with your insurance claim. The more they can do, the less you have to do. No stress, no phone tag, no wrong information or answers, no runaround. Not only do they fix your car, they handle your claim from start to finish. Woodland Auto Body, 1208 Burnside Avenue, East Hartford. Call 860-528-4141. WoodlandAuto.com. Just think of them as your 911 when you have an accident. Well, joining us in studio, our special guests this morning, this special broadcast, Ken Welsh, president of Coalition for a Better Wallingford. We have the mayor of Wallingford, Bill Dickinson, on the program. We have the co-founder of the Coalition, Jen Short. We have Ernie Brazik, a pharmacist, also on the board of directors of Coalition for a Better Wallingford. We have the mayor of Wallingford, Bill Dickinson, with us in studio, along with Craig Turner, who is Wallingford's director of youth and social services. And now joining us on the line, she is the founder of Learn to Cope Massachusetts, Joanne Peterson. Joanne, good morning and welcome to this special broadcast.
Oh, good morning. Thank you very much for including me.
And say good morning to our friends in the studio, who you know, by the way.
I do, and I have utmost respect for them all. Hello, everyone.
Hi, Joanne.
Joanne, talk about Learn to Cope.
So Learn to Cope has been around for 14 years. It started in 2004, and it began when our family was hit with this epidemic. It began with prescription pills, heavy opiates. And, you know, right out of high school, my son unfortunately had tried OxyContin, and it turned into a heroin addiction, which we all know that's usually the path it leads to. And, you know, our family was blindsided like many other families. And back in those days, there really wasn't any talk about, no one knew what OxyContin was. I had never heard of it. So when I talked about drugs to my children, I never warned them about pills or OxyContin for that matter. And he made a terrible decision. And unfortunately, there was a man in town who was providing alcohol to underage kids, high school kids. And then he also was providing pills. One night, apparently, he was too lazy to go out and buy alcohol for them, so he crushed up a bunch of OxyContin and passed that out to them. And that, you know, brought our family and other families down the road to hell. Mm-hmm. About 3 years later, by then, you know, I had started trying to figure out treatment, affording treatment, what is treatment, how do you find it? And then he had gotten himself into major trouble. After 3 years of our family desperately learning the hard way how this treatment process works and recovery process from opiates, it's not something that everyone can obtain. That's not easily obtained. It takes a long time. It's a long process. And, you know, we had to learn the hard lessons along with him, you know, that the first detox wasn't the last, that he needed long-term treatment, that coming home here wasn't probably the best option for him anymore because the triggers were everywhere. The drugs were so easy to find really anywhere. And, you know, once it's attached to their brain receptors, that's really all they can think about for a long time. And so that it took about 4 years before he could get 1 year clean and sober. But when he got in serious trouble, the stigma began because there was a newspaper article, and it was more about what he did than what the true story was behind the story, and not that he and many others in my little town of Rainham were suffering from heroin addiction that was brought on by this pill that was, well, we later found mismarketed out to the general public. And, you know, that company pled guilty to that later in 2007. But, you know, my son became a statistic like so many others just from one night, one bad decision. He, you know, he wasn't someone that got in trouble all the time. He went to school every day. He always had, you know, a little job, and he did that driving that changed everything. Still today, our lives will never be the same. Today, though, he is in long-term recovery. He's a father, a husband. He owns a home. I'm very fortunate, but learned to cope. You know, when I came out after our family was stigmatized over what happened, once I came out to get our family's dignity back and to say, hey, you know, this is a huge issue that no one knows about. There's many young people losing their lives, and, you know, it's more died suddenly, and people were calling it suicides when it was really overdoses a lot of the times. And, you know, I sort of accidentally brought it out. And when I came out, I heard from hundreds of parents. And we just started meeting in a room. I tried to keep up with talking with them over email, and I set up, you know, through the DA's office. You know, they used drug seizure money to help me set up a little website. It really wasn't a website. It was more like a message board through Yahoo. But, you know, they had someone help me set something like that up so we can communicate. And I was hearing from so many people, I couldn't keep up with it. Mm-hmm. So I said, let's start meeting. And in 2004 was our first meeting, and there was about 30 people there, and the district attorney came, and, you know, he was great. Bill Keating, who's now Congressman right. Keating.
This is 2004, by the way. We're talking 13 years ago.
Yes, 2004. And that first meeting turned into now 27 chapters around the state of Massachusetts. We became heavy advocates. People started feeling their dignity back because we started coming together and saying, hey, this happened to my family, and this happened to my family. My son's now deceased. My daughter's now deceased. My granddaughter's deceased. I mean, people just really started coming out, and, you know, it just took one person or a group of people to just say, I'm not ashamed. This happened to my family. And honestly, I still feel today that there's many victims from this opiate epidemic, and I know you'll be talking to Joe, and we're grateful for him because he really exposed what really happened here in this country. But, you know, I know Connecticut, Massachusetts, all of the eastern states, northeastern states have been hit heavy. And then, you know, the whole Route 24 trafficking started going into Florida to the pill mills, and we had kids going there and coming back with thousands of oxycodone pills, and it just got worse by the year. And by 2007, I had to leave my job because we had people coming down from the North Shore of Massachusetts down to the South Shore to our meeting saying, when can you bring this up here? We need help. And so I would drive up to the North Shore once a week, and finally Partners Healthcare recognized, you know, that this was really a worthy service to people.
So, you know, Joanne, are you restricted to just Massachusetts, or do you go all around? Obviously, you're interacting with the Wallingford Coalition, but how can people get in touch, I guess, is my question.
Well, they can get in touch. Right now, I am pretty restricted to Massachusetts.
Okay.
However, Connecticut is not that far away. New Hampshire and Maine are not that far away. So we do have training that... you know, we had a consultant.
Joanne, can you hold through the break? We're coming up on a two-minute break. Can you hold?
Sure.
Okay, we'll get back with Joanne Peterson in just a moment. Coming up on news, and then we're back with this special Brad and Dan broadcast. Don't go away. I'll ask you a couple more questions as to...
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. Protests are planned in the Middle East with President Trump about to announce the United States recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
The move clearly angering Palestinians who want Jerusalem as their capital as well. President Mahmoud Abbas warning in this statement, quote, such a move will have detrimental consequences on the peace process. U.S. Marine fast teams have been deployed across the Middle East. The U.S. embassies anticipating further reaction as many questions are being raised now about the impact of this move.
Fox's Griff Jenkins in Washington. A man's ordered held in London, accused of planning to attack the British Prime Minister's home and office and kill her.
It seems that the plot was to gain access to Downing Street using some sort of improvised explosives or explosive bomb to get through the gates, and then the idea was to target the Prime Minister Theresa May either with guns or knives to assassinate her.
Sky News correspondent Joe Tidy in London. Fox News. We report. You decide.
Have an unwanted house or need debt relief? Sell your house now for cash with MyHouseBuyer.com. Job loss, divorce, foreclosure, repairs, bankruptcy, fire damage, or inherited house you'll never use? No problem. Sell now with no agents, no hassle, and no stress with MyHouseBuyer.com. Call now, 860-325-SOLD. MyHouseBuyer.com. Sell your home hassle-free with no commissions, a cash offer within 24 hours, and closing when you want it. Free consultation, 860-325-SOLD. MyHouseBuyer.com.
Weekdays at 12 noon on the Talk of Connecticut, it's the Drew Mortgage Show. If you have questions or concerns about your current mortgage or you're looking to refinance your home, call Douglas Rowan of Drew Mortgage. That's the Drew Mortgage Show. Weekdays at noon on the Talk of Connecticut.
This is House Call for Health. When's a worse time to come down with the flu than during the holiday season? Not only are you feeling run down when everyone else is out having fun, but we've been told over and over not to mix antibiotics and alcohol. But did you ever wonder why you can't do both? The common thought is that alcohol could reduce the effectiveness of your medicine, but that's not necessarily true. Rather, it can work to worsen the side effects of antibiotics like stomach discomfort, diarrhea, nausea, and drowsiness. It can also slow your body's ability to bounce back from the infection, potentially adding more time to your recovery period. And mixing alcohol and antibiotics could prove dangerous for your internal organs too, particularly the liver, which is already on overdrive working to break down the medicine. So if you're headed out this year and you've got your meds in tow, stick to some sparkling water and skip the hard stuff. For more on this story, check foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health, I'm Alex Hine, Fox News.
Good morning on 84 eastbound. We are seeing some bumper-to-bumper traffic through Waterbury. Good news farther east by exit 41 as you approach Park Road. A crash was cleared, but residual delays remain back through Finneman Road. Southbound 91, accident in the HOV swale over by Jennings Road. Two westbounds heavy into the Founders Bridge. And on Route 6, a closure in the area of Old Town Road because of a transformer fire. Just follow local detours. 9 north is heavy through the Aragoni Bridge stoplights, and 8 southbound slows through Derby. Exits 18 down through 14. I'm Cindy Waitman back at 7:45 with your next traffic check on the Talk of Connecticut.
And welcome back to Brad and Dan. Say, DeSopo Funeral Chapel has been providing premier funeral service for well over a century. You can trust the folks at DeSopo Funeral Chapel in Wethersfield or East Hartford locations. DeSopo.com. Our special broadcast today is we focus on the opioid crisis in our state. We've got our guests in studio along with Joanne Peterson. We've been talking with Joanne, who founded Learn to Cope in Massachusetts online. And a couple of more questions for Joanne, who's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair, I might add, as are all our guests today. Joanne, I guess this group, the Coalition for a Better Wallingford, learned about you doing some Google searches, et cetera, and then that's how you interacted, and you provided a framework for them as to how to institute a similar program as Learn to Cope. Is that correct?
Yes, I remember, about 4 years ago, and then I came to Connecticut to one of their meetings, and they had gathered a large crowd of people, so they were starting to do that work, and I know they're still doing that today, which is amazing work, and it's life-saving work. When a family enters something like this and can learn, when they can get support, education, resources, and hope, the odds of their son or daughter or spouse or grandchild or whoever it is that's experiencing this are much better, because without support, you internally blame yourself as a parent first, and it can take you a long time to reach out for help. But when there's something like that available in the community, and they go to a meeting, they could learn things that it took our family 3 years to learn the hard way. And, you know, they can recognize that treatment is needed before that person can find recovery, or ways that they can motivate that person to treatment. And, you know, some of the things that we do as parents, you know, we when our children grow up with skinned knees or a fever, we go to the doctor and we try to take care of them. And then when it's something like this, some of the things we think we're doing that are helping them, a lot of times are actually not helping them, giving them money, letting them have the car. There's things the family really needs to come together and learn from other families and from experts, that once they start changing the tide in the home, we can get that person into treatment and hopefully they'll find recovery.
Okay. Ken, anything else you want to add before we wrap up our segment with Joanne?
No, I think she did a pretty good job of giving you an idea of how debilitating this can be to a family and how necessary a hope and support group is to that family, bringing resources to them, helping them make some tough decisions, understanding the behaviors of the addict, and also delving into how insidious this is or pervasive it happened. You know, doctors have been doling out these pills without knowing the impact and the effect they have on people. And again, like she said, when she got started, you get blindsided by it. And the kids, when they see the prescription pills being distributed as freely, they've taken it to the next level. And the heroin is part of our culture now, unfortunately.
Joanne, in other words, rather than going off in a million directions, what Learn to Cope does is essentially bring this into focus. Would that be correct to assume?
It would be, and we're very fortunate here in Massachusetts where our Department of Public Health and even our governor is extremely supportive. He has been to our meetings, the governor, and he himself has seen, you know, that with solid education and support, you know, including experts to help educate families, it can save lives. And, you know, at some point, maybe the fatality statistics can go down, the crime rates can go down. When a family is not supported and someone comes home from treatment, you know, a lot of times they can end up right back out there, and it's not the family's fault. It's that they just don't know how to handle this, and they're expected to be a treatment center, and the treatment centers do not keep them long enough. Insurance companies sometimes will stop paying. And, you know, people are paying for this insurance, and yet you can't use it sometimes. It's really, the system is really broken. So there's so many different legs to this. But what I can say is here in Massachusetts, we're very lucky that they recognize that support from the families and advocacy and families, you know, speaking up for what's needed can make a huge difference in the crisis that state is experiencing.
Joanne, thanks very much for spending some time with us and educating our audience. Our guests, anything else you'd like to ask Joanne? Or
no, thanks, Joanne.
Thank you, Joanne.
We'll be talking
again
soon.
Thanks, Joanne.
Thank you. See you soon, Ken. Thank you.
Yep.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Joanne Peterson, Learn to Cope in Massachusetts. Craig Turner is the Wallingford Director of Youth and Social Services. And Craig, you've seen the impact. Relay what you have witnessed to our audience.
So, tying into that question, off air you asked the question about, so where do these individuals get these drugs from? And that really is the critical question to look at. Because there's, historically, the issue of heroin has been connected to the stigma. You know, street drug dealing, homeless people, low-income people, desperate people. And that is not the landscape at all anymore. We know that 80% in 2016, 80% of the people that were identified as having died from an opioid overdose in the state of Connecticut started with prescription drugs.
Prescription drugs.
Right. And the question of where they get them is actually pretty easily defined. It's not the street. It's not in a dark alley. It's from either friends or relatives initially.
About 70% of the drugs that get out there come through friends or relatives.
They raid the medicine cabinet?
Often they're given to them. They don't need to raid them. They can buy them. They can steal them, but they're shared. Not uncommon at all to have that happen. The other largest percent, which is about 20 more percent, so you're talking about 90% total, come from that first doctor who prescribes the drug. So 90% of the drugs that are starting the opioid addiction and the epidemic that we're talking about in terms of the crisis come through a prescription drug of one kind or another in one manner or another. And if you think of where do those friends and relatives get those drugs to begin with, the predominant simple answer to that is the first doctor, one doctor that's prescribing the drugs to them. So it's as the mayor referenced, so that's part of our system. That's the legal system. That's the treatment system. That's the medical care system that's actually inadvertently creating the crisis that we have. It's not street dealing. It's not China. It's not Mexico. The issues of other drugs that are now superseding prescription drug use by these folks once they leave the prescription drugs is simply economics. It's too expensive for them to get a hold of the drugs legally, so they're buying them at a street rate price. And the danger there, and Jen described that with her daughter, is that you don't know what you're getting, and they're frequently lethal. We've had several fentanyl episodes in the state of Connecticut, you know, where a rash of individuals get a bad batch of street drugs that kill them. So one of the phrases that one of our programs, Dr. Sachs, came into town. There's a Wallingford Coalition for Women. It's a women's group. They actually invited him in as part of the Red Ribbon Week campaign that we had this year. And he uses the phrase, looking at how to stop this, turning off the faucet as opposed to mopping up the mess, which is really what we've been doing. Right. We've been trying to respond to the mess that's been created and not actively looking at educating people who are patients, parents who may be patients or have children who are patients, and the medical community about what they're doing, how they're doing it, and what the impact is. Because if we can turn the faucet off of the prescription drugs, we can reduce the opiate crisis in terms of the addiction by 80%.
Mm-hmm. So is the message getting out then about the dangers of opioids?
So it is getting out. We know it's getting out because some legislative changes have occurred that respond to the crisis. I think responsibility is being taken in terms of what medical experts are now saying to doctors. The CDC has come out with new guidelines telling doctors that instead of trying to solve the pain crisis by treating it with opioids, we need to be looking at every other alternative first before we go down that path. So that's a paradigm shift. And that's largely a paradigm shift that was realized because of how hospitals and other medical care providers were being evaluated for their certificate to do their work to get their insurance reimbursements from Medicaid and Medicare. So solving the pain was the problem. And if you're solving the pain, you're doing good work, and you'll be able to get your medication, you get your reimbursements. It does come down to money in a lot of cases, and I think it blindsided everybody. It was insidious, the process through which that occurred, and the whole issue with the DEA is really brought to light how insidious it was. The central authority for law enforcement in the country that looks to protect us from these drugs getting in our hands in a way that's dangerous were minimized in terms of what their options were to control the illegal flow and the excessive flow of drugs. So that's turning off the faucet, and they were turning off the faucet, and the Marino bill effectively tied their hands behind their backs to be able to do that well.
Which is an incredible thing, and we'll get to that before the program is over. We have at one point he was Connecticut Pharmacist of the Year. He's on the board of directors of Coalition for a Better Wallingford, and that's Ernie Berezik. And Ernie, talk about this from a pharmacist's perspective. Give us your take on all of this.
Sure. Thank you, Dan. I remember back, I was a pharmaceutical sales rep for a large multinational company. So I understand fully how the manufacturers will push the envelope as far as what they approve by the FDA to market. And this goes back to Purdue Pharma, how in 1995, when they put OxyContin on the market, how they pushed it from intractable cancer pain to chronic pain to any kind of pain. And then hence, they made billions of dollars. And then they, as you mentioned previously, 2007, they paid over a $600 million fine for making claims that they were not approved by the FDA making. But besides that, from my perspective, I was a sales rep for 20 years and then went back to being a dispensing pharmacist. And two observations then, which brought me to what we're doing today, is that the establishment of all these pain management clinics, and I'm filling prescriptions for 320 Percocet, 180 OxyContin, et cetera, and I said, wow. My first thought was that someone's not going to miss a few tablets and out of that bottle in someone's medicine cabinet. Number two, there's a drug called Suboxone, which is part of the medication-assisted treatment to prevent withdrawal and recovery, and that was on our fast-moving section, and all these beautiful 18- to 25-year-old women and men coming in to get their weekly or biweekly fix of Suboxone for maintenance to their addiction. And so at that point in time, that was around 2008, I just decided to jump right in and, like you say, Google it, and to see what was the disconnect in the 20 years I've been this sales rep, but not working in a drugstore. And so I went back to talk to a couple of my addiction psychiatrist customers, I say, quote unquote, and they were very nice. And then I literally picked their brains, and that got me going. So along around 2012, when they were starting to form, or 2013, form this coalition, Craig Turner suggested, he said, I ought to attend some meetings and see if there's anything I can do to help, and then the rest is history.
Okay. Hold those thoughts, and Joe Ranazzisi is going to join us in just a bit as well, and he was the whistleblower, if you watched, and I don't know how you couldn't have watched that 60 Minutes piece on all of this, but we'll get to Joe in just a moment as well. But traffic is also an issue on this Wednesday morning, so let's get an update from Cindy Waitman. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning, Dan. We have an accident, 91 South at Jennings Road. It's in the HOV swale. Also, watch out for delays back through 291 as a result of that. 84 West is slammed past the Bulkley Bridge into Sigourney Street. There's eastbound traffic as you make your way from Route 9 in Farmington out towards I-91. 2 West is at a crawl through Glastonbury and tie-ups into the Founders Bridge. Route 69 at Gaylord Mountain Road in Bethany. There is an accident working. It's affecting both directions. And 84 is heavy both ways through Waterbury. This report is brought to you by the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. December 1st through the 7th is Crohn's and Colitis Awareness Week. Learn how you can help raise awareness of inflammatory bowel diseases affecting 1.6 million Americans. Visit Crohn'sColitisFoundation.org. I'm Cindy Waitman back at 8:07 with your next traffic check on the Talk of Connecticut.
Welcome back. Our special broadcast on this opioid epidemic nationally, of course, in Connecticut, and we're focusing on the town of Wallingford. Another quick question. We've got about a minute during this segment with Ernie Merezik, pharmacist. Ernie, I mean, you were filling out these substantial pill orders. Who was you're getting these prescriptions from the doctors, right?
Right, but these are usually people who address themselves as pain specialists. Now, we learned, and I'm not degrading these doctors and their expertise, but we learned that most medical schools don't have a pain management course. So a lot of these people have took this upon themselves. And some of them, unfortunately, were prescribing too much and got themselves in trouble. But assuming it's a legitimate need, they were just like giving this stuff out like candy. I mean, it was just amazing.
Yeah, the education is actually coming from the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And so the pharmaceutical companies are saying the more the merrier, yes, essentially.
Right. Oh, yeah. And now the pharmaceutical companies are making billions on the medication-assisted treatment.
Okay. Hold that thought. We're coming up on a break, and then we're going to be joined by Joe Ranazzisi. But on this Wednesday, time for Your Money Now.
Jennifer Kishenko with Your Money Now. Production of TV shows, including HBO's Westworld, has been halted amid Southern California's wildfires. The sci-fi drama was filming its second season in an area near two Los Angeles County fires, but producers decided to shut down and avoid any danger to actors or crew members. Many shows shoot outdoor scenes in the outskirts north of the city, where large blazes have choked the air with smoke and are threatening thousands of homes and buildings. Duke Energy says 375,000 of its customers may have been affected by a data breach revealed by PayPal last week. The country's largest electric company says the customers paid a bill by check or cash at 550 walk-in payment processing centers in the Carolinas, Florida, Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky since 2008. A Senate panel has approved a plan to ease the rule block for regional banks, advancing the most significant bipartisan rollback of financial regulation since the post-crisis rules were put in place. That's your money now.
Confused about what to do with your retirement funds? Call the trusted tax and retirement planning specialists at Cowan Tax Advisory Group for your no-cost review at 860-676-1100 or online at cowantaxgroup.com. Investment advisory services offered through SGL Financial, LLC.
Winter weather is here, friends. Make sure your house is ready for the cold, the wind, the snow. WeatherTight Systems can help. Yes, they're the roofing, siding, window, and gutter experts. Receive $500 off a complete gutter helmet and helmet heat system for your home for as low as $49 per month. You can have a new gutter system installed. Never clean your gutters again. Visit WeatherTiteSystems.com.
When you're a business owner, sometimes it's hard to get noticed. You could be the very best, but if no one can find you, it doesn't really matter. It's time to get fierce. Connoisseur Digital is here to help you generate revenue by using the power of the net. You'll be at the top of internet searches, grab attention with display ads and social media, all on your customer smartphone. So, ready to get fierce? Not that fierce. Connoisseur Digital, we're here, we're fierce, we're local, and we're ready to help. Call 888-819-2336, online at fierceleads.com.
Well, you hear us talk about in the Touchpoint Rehab interview chair, and we have the chairs filled today. If you're looking for a skilled nursing and rehab center, you want to return to health, home, and what's important in life as soon as possible. Touchpoints Rehab has innovative, personalized programs designed to accelerate the recovery process. Touchpoints Rehab services include skilled nursing, dementia memory care, orthopedic and surgical rehab outpatient therapy, home care and discharge planning, and a comprehensive congestive heart failure program in partnership with St. Francis Hospital. Touchpoints of Manchester is now a veterans rehabilitation center offering veterans short-term, long-term, and behavioral health care. Call for a tour. Brad and I have been. 860-812-0788. 860-812-0788. TouchpointsRehab.com. Four locations, Manchester, Bloomfield, East Windsor, and Farmington. Part of the iCare Management family of facilities. Find out why folks are saying it's the place they trust with mom's care. Welcome back to Brad and Dan. Brad is off for the next few days. I'm Dan Lovallo, and in studio we have today the president of Coalition for a Better Wallingford, Ken Welsh. We have the co-founder of the Coalition, Jen Short. We have the mayor of Wallingford, Bill Dickinson. We have Ernie Marizic, pharmacist on the board of directors of Coalition for a Better Wallingford, and Craig Turner, Wallingford's director of youth and social services. And now joining us on the program, and if you watch the 60 Minutes piece, you know all about Joe Ranazzisi, who was the actual whistleblower. He was a deputy assistant in the DEA. He's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. Joe, we are honored to have you on the program. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Joe, what has happened since this 60 Minutes piece? Anything?
Well, Congress, certain senators in Congress have asked for a repeal of the bill that basically took away DEA's authority to quickly go after these large companies that are in violation of the regulations and statute and sending drugs downstream that were ultimately diverted. So there is movement. I don't know how much traction it's going to get, but I hope that DEA will have their authority restored, because that's the whole idea behind this. DEA was left crippled in their investigative abilities, and if we get it restored, that would be the best thing for everyone.
Explain to our audience, and this, of course, is the Marino bill introduced by Representative Tom Marino, who almost ended up leading a government agency, but explain to our audience how this bill hand-tied DEA.
Okay. If you look back at how we were doing things, we had an internet drug problem in the early 2000s. And we started looking at a choke point because millions of tablets of hydrocodone and alprazolam were being sent out of these internet pharmacies, these facilitation centers that were brick-and-mortar pharmacies throughout the United States. But there was never any doctor-patient relationship. They were just filling prescriptions, basically. And there was so many doctors who were involved in this and so many pharmacies that were involved in this. We were looking for a choke point. And the choke point was the distributors. The distributors have a responsibility under the law, under the act, under the regulations, to look at each order and determine if that order is suspicious or not. And if the order is suspicious if it's for an unusual size, unusual frequency, or outside of the usual normal ordering pattern. And what ends up happening is, nobody, none of the distributors was really doing that. They weren't filing these suspicious orders, which would give DEA an idea of who might be involved in diversion. So we brought them in, we sat them down one-on-one, each company got a turn, and we explained to them what was going on and what they needed to do to stop this activity. And we told them, we gave them a detailed explanation. We gave them figures, facts, statistics. We even gave them a binder with PowerPoint information, and they continued to do it. They continued to distribute downstream, and no one was filing suspicious orders. At that point in time, we took administrative action. We shut some of them down. We used immediate suspension orders, and everything was, we thought, was going to be okay. In fact, in one of the cases in 2006, the normal pharmacy in 2006 was distributing about 80,000 hydrocodone tablets a year in the United States.
Right.
We had 34 pharmacies in total distributed 98.6 million tablets.
Wow.
Okay? So that's just hydrocodone.
Right, right.
So you understand the gravity and the egregiousness of this. So this happened again. 3 years later, they did the same thing, but only now they were either supplying pain clinics with drugs or pharmacies that were filling pain clinic prescriptions. Again, the prescriptions were not valid prescriptions. They were for the highest dose of oxycodone possible with alprazolam or another benzodiazepine and a skeletal muscle relaxant. That combination is a very wicked combination that's sought after by a lot of drug seekers. So we saw it again, and we did the same thing. There's an example of a case where we had a major distributor sending drugs downstream to two pharmacies in a town in Florida, and those two pharmacies in one year received over 3 million tablets and dispensed, you know, about 3 million tablets. No due diligence on those customers. They said, well, it's a chain drugstore. They should do their own due diligence. That's not what the act says.
Joe, we're running out of time
during
this segment, but if you can hang in there, we're going to break for news at the top of the hour.
Sure.
I do want to get to some of the other portions of that 60 Minutes piece, including this town in West Virginia. So a lot to talk about with our guests, including Joe Ranazzisi. We're breaking for news at the top of the hour. We will be back on this special Brad and Dan broadcast. News is next.
WDRC-AM, WDRC-FM, HD3 Hartford, WSNG Torrington, WWCO Waterbury, WMMW Meriden. The Brad and Dan Show, presented by Footprint Shoes and Accessories.
He promised he'd do it during the campaign.
I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News.
We will move the American embassy to the eternal capital of the Jewish people, Jerusalem.
And now President Trump is ready to follow through later today, announcing the plan to move our embassy from Tel Aviv. But that's not going over very well in the Middle East. Fox's Simon Owen monitoring live from London.
Dave, Palestinian Prime Minister Rami Hamdallah saying this destroys the peace process. A number of countries expressing concerns, including Jordan, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, China, Russia, France, and Britain, all warning of a potentially angry reaction in the Middle East. The Pope calling Jerusalem a unique city. And he said the status quo should be preserved to avoid new tensions. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying our historical national identity is receiving important expressions, particularly today. Dave?
Simon, in London, two men have been arrested, accused of plotting to assassinate British Prime Minister Theresa May, wanting to bomb her office and residence, then after the explosion, attack her with knives. Three wildfires continue to scorch Southern California.
These flames continue to burn out of control. 0% containment on this fire right now.
Fox's Jonathan Hunt near the most destructive of the fires in Ventura County. Nearly 200 homes have been destroyed. Time Magazine's out with its Person of the Year, which in 2017 is actually persons. Fox's Tanya J. Powers tells us who live.
Well, the Silence Breakers take the Person of the Year title. That stems from the Me Too hashtag, which has been gaining popularity in the wake of the sexual assault and harassment stories that have come to light in recent weeks. Among those profiled in the piece, Ashley Judd, who is one of Harvey Weinstein's accusers, Taylor Swift, who took a DJ to court over sexual assault, and Tarana Burke, who created that Me Too hashtag more than a decade ago. Dave.
This is Fox News. Fair and balanced.
I'm Jay Farner from Quicken Loans. Choosing the right mortgage lender involves much more than just a rate. Quicken Loans has earned 11 J.D. Power Awards for client satisfaction. And we invented Rocket Mortgage, a simpler, hassle-free way to get a mortgage completely online. No one else has anything like it. So choose Quicken Loans, America's number one online lender. Call Quicken Loans today at 800-QUICKEN. Or go to rocketmortgage.com. That's 800-QUICKEN.
Equal housing lender, NMLS number 3030.
Life happens. With ADT, you can feel safe with an ADT starter kit professionally installed for only $49. Call today and install an ADT starter kit that includes security panel, keypad, key fob, entry and motion sensors, and for a limited time, get a camera included and installed at no additional cost. That's a $449 value installed for just $49.
Requires 36-month monitoring contract QSB and easy pay activation. Early term fees may apply. Certain marks excluded. License available at ADT.com. Florida EF001121 UZF1679.
House Republicans plan to vote today on a bill Democrats claim is a Christmas gift for the NRA. It would allow gun owners with concealed carry permits in their home states to freely travel to any state that allows concealed weapons. This as the Justice Department reviews devices made infamous in Vegas.
In the aftermath of the Las Vegas mass shooting, Congress quickly proposed limits on bump stocks, a gun accessory that mimics automatic weapons fire. Now, the Justice Department is considering if those devices should be illegal already under a federal machine gun ban. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says the review will include input from the public and gun manufacturers.
Fox's Jared Halpern at the Capitol.
The Senate Judiciary Committee holds a hearing about bump stocks and reporting to the National Background Check System.
Russia's president is analyzing the International Olympic Committee ruling to bar Russia from the upcoming 2018 Winter Olympic Games, though some Russian athletes, if they are proven clean, would be allowed to still compete in those Olympic Games, but under the Olympic, not Russian flag. Drama at 35,000 feet when passengers on a plane who had to go had nowhere to go.
Pilots routinely make unscheduled stops when their aircraft loses cabin pressure, but a different kind of pressure led to a flight diversion over the weekend. We're just learning that restrooms stopped working mid-flight on a Boeing 757 Delta flight from New York City to Seattle. The flight crew, after hearing of passengers' discomfort, made a left turn at the Canadian border for a bathroom break in Billings, Montana. The Billings Gazette reporting that even after landing, passengers had to wait as a gate wasn't available, and the aircraft had to pull off into a cargo area where a stairway was brought out for those passengers in need. Rich Dennison, Fox News.
On Wall Street, stock futures are lower the morning after a sell-off. Markets in Asia were down 2% overnight. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
Good morning. This is Erin Connolly for Channel 3 Eyewitness News. A 16-year-old girl was found shot inside a car that crashed in Waterbury. And now a 27-year-old man police said she was having a relationship with was arrested for her death. Waterbury police were called to the intersection of Thomaston Avenue and Driggs Street around 8:30 Monday night for the report of a car that crashed into two utility poles. Police said Evelie Santiago, a student at Wilby High School, was in the front passenger seat and had three gunshot wounds to her head and hand. The driver of the vehicle, Dominic Pittman of Waterbury, was arrested and charged with her murder. A big boost for the city of Hartford, Stanley Black & Decker will open a new manufacturing center in the capital city. The 23,000-square-foot facility will be located at One Constitution Plaza and will eventually employ 50 people. The International Olympic Committee is banning Russia's Olympic team from the 2018 Winter Games over doping allegations. The IOC announced the sanctions after finding widespread doping at the 2014 Games in Sochi, Russia. They say Russian athletes who pass a series of drug tests can compete as neutrals in South Korea next year. If those athletes win, Russia's flag and national anthem will not be part of the ceremonies. Russia is denying the allegations. And the longest-serving member of the House of Representatives says he will retire and wants his son to replace him. Democratic Congressman John Conyers says he's stepping down but insists allegations of sexual misconduct against him are not true. House leaders from both parties have called on the Michigan Democrat to resign amid allegations he sexually harassed former female staffers. That's the news on the Talk of Connecticut. I'm Erin Connolly, Channel 3 Eyewitness News.
Since 1988, the Fancy Bagels family has made breakfast and lunch to order with fresh bagels made daily. Come in to enjoy 26 varieties of bagels and 15 cream cheeses. Eat in or take out. Fancy Bagels has something for everyone with an array of Boar's Head brand meats and cheeses and unsurpassed breakfast sandwiches. Fancy Bagels also offers catering and delivery for parties, business meetings, or just because. Stop in at either of our locations in Southington or Farmington or visit us online at fancybagel.com for more information.
Napa Know-How.
Screwdrivers are like socks. Somehow the one you need is always missing. Lucky for you, Napa has a 26-piece screwdriver set on sale for just $19.99. Get it to replace lost tools or upgrade your current set for your neighbor to borrow and never return. Again, 26 screwdrivers for just $19.99. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Offer ends 12/31/17.
On 84, we've got bumper-to-bumper traffic through Waterbury. We're also seeing some slowdowns as you make your way out towards I-91. Westbound 84 is jammed up past the Bulkley Bridge. Route 185 in Simsbury, there is an accident with injuries over by Cobtail Way. Bradley Airport Connector, subject to closure with a transformer fire near Old Newgate Road, so stay with Route 187 as your alternate. And 91 southbound is slammed as you make your way from exits 38 down through I-84. Also, watch out on Route 69 at Gaylord Mountain Road in Bethany with an accident affecting traffic in both directions. I'm Cindy Waitman, back at 8:15 with your next traffic check on the Talk of Connecticut.
Our Channel 3 early warning weather: rain ends this morning, becoming partly to mostly sunny and breezy for the rest of the day, but the temperatures fall through the 40s during the afternoon. Clear and cold tonight, a low of 25. Tomorrow, partly sunny, seasonably chilly, a high of 44. It is 48 degrees in Hartford. Before we get back to our special broadcast, I want to remind you, Medicare's annual election period ends this month, December. Now is the time to be reviewing all your options. It can be an overwhelming task. Call American Senior Benefits of Farmington to help. They assist Medicare enrollees in understanding their options when you're trying to choose the best plan that suits your needs. American Senior Benefits will listen to your concerns and help find a suitable product. They work with many major Medicare supplemental carriers and Medicare Advantage carriers. They will give you unbiased options that truly match your needs. Even if you have made a decision but are unsure about it, you can still call. If you're concerned about being in a network, please consider a Medicare supplement. If your doctor accepts Medicare, they will accept a Medicare supplement. Call now for a complimentary review. 860-676-0260. That's 860-676-0260. Call American Senior Benefits, 860-676-0260 in Farmington. And by the way, we talk about the election period. It actually ends tomorrow, December 7th. This is our special broadcast as we focus on the opioid crisis in our country, in our state, focusing in on the town of Wallingford. And we had Jen Short, co-founder, president of Coalition for a Better Wallingford, was with us earlier. The president of Coalition for a Better Wallingford, Ken Welsh, is still with us, along with the mayor of Wallingford, Bill Dickinson, Craig Turner. He is the director of Wallingford's Youth and Social Services, Ernie Merezik, pharmacist on the board of directors, and also with us, and if you watch the 60 Minutes piece, you know what he has done. He was the whistleblower in all of this, and that is Joe Ranazzisi. Joe was a deputy assistant in the DEA, and so we're going to return to Joe in our Touchpoints Rehab interview, Chair. Joe, what was the tipping point? Was it this town in West Virginia, which was getting millions of pills in a town with a population of about 400?
I think that brought a lot of... I think that gripped the country when they heard about that huge volume going to that small community. I think that's what the tipping point was, yeah. I mean, we had cases where there were millions of tablets going into small community pharmacies, but it was almost like people didn't care. But when finally this West Virginia case came through, it just showed the volume of drug going into communities that shouldn't be able to hold that volume of drug. So I think that was the tipping point, yes.
And what happened at the DEA when you tried to pursue this? What happened to you?
Well, when we were pursuing the large companies, we'd done hundreds of these cases against small companies, small mom-and-pop pharmacies, and we never had any issues. When we started to go after the large corporations in 2012, we started getting inquiries. 2011 and 2012... started getting a lot of inquiries, questions like, well, what are you guys doing and why are you doing this? And, you know, we need an explanation of this case. And what we found was the companies were hiring, you know, very influential attorneys who had the ability to go into the Department of Justice and complain about what we were doing. And we started getting pushback.
And then, what, you had some who were in the DEA who had a hand in writing this bill? Sort all this out for our audience.
Well, yeah, the way the Post reported it was that there were at least one former DEA attorney who was assisting Congress in writing this bill. Now, what we do know is this, the way the bill was written, it was written very well. It was very hidden to the intent of the bill. If you read the language that removes our ability to go after large corporations upstream, they were very careful with the language. So they made it virtually impossible for us to go after an upstream corporation using an immediate suspension order. And it's just based on the language. So before, all I have to show is an imminent threat to public health and safety. I have to show that they're not doing their job, and because they're not doing their job, it's causing imminent threat. Now I have to show an immediate threat, and that's almost impossible because it takes a period of time for the drugs to get from those distributors down into the pharmacy and out to the patients. So showing an immediate threat is almost impossible. And that's where they got us. They took away that language. They changed the language, which virtually hobbled us from being able to go after and immediately stopping transactions at the distributor level.
Did this bill have bipartisan support?
Yes. It was passed unanimous consent. So it was passed. Everybody just agreed to it.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, Joe, your story is incredible, but one aspect that really stuck in my mind, The bill that was passed that basically took the authority away from DEA, that was the excuse or the reason for it was to make sure that pain medication was available to the public, so that it was as if it was an inability to get pain medication, and this was to improve the ability for people who needed the medication to be able to get it. Is that correct?
That's what the industry was saying, and that's what the congressional sponsors of the bill were saying, and that's just not accurate. There was more than enough drug in the system to handle everyone's needs. What they were saying was, well, if DEA continues to enforce the law, okay, it's going to negatively affect how we send drugs downstream. So either you change the law or people are not going to get their drugs. That's basically what they were saying, and that's just nonsense. If you go into a doctor, the doctor makes a determination that you need a controlled substance, and he issues the prescription. It's a medical determination. I don't know of too many true pain patients who are having a hard time getting their medication. It's just an excuse.
Well, I'm sure you saw Senator Manchin from West Virginia say he had no idea this was part of the bill. Do you believe that?
On a unanimous consent, yes, I do. Because from what I understand of unanimous consent, they rely on leadership. If leadership says the bill is non-controversial and the agencies agree to it, the bill's passed. Okay, so I honestly believe that certain congressmen and senators who are notorious for not allowing bills like this to go through were the wool was pulled over their heads. And I really truly believe that. Now, that doesn't make it right, but sometimes they just go with what the leadership says. And in this case, it hurt a lot of people.
Mayor Dickinson.
It really illustrates how, regardless of where you are, whether you're a healthcare professional, whether you're a patient, or whether you sit in government and need to make judgments on this, you have to be watchful. You cannot trust all of what is being said. You need to be well-informed and really look out for the welfare of our entire population.
No question. Okay, gentlemen, hang in there. We're going to take a quick break for traffic, then we'll be back with our guests as we have this special broadcast up until 8:30 this morning on Brad and Dan. Brad not with us today. He's going to have a few days off. He'll be back before Christmas. Let's get an update on traffic now from Cindy Waitman. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning, Dan. We are jammed up on 84 through Waterbury, both directions. We're also seeing slowdowns as you make your way east from Route 9 in Farmington to I-91. Westbound 84 is packed. Governor Street into Sigourney Street. Route 20 subject to closure with a transformer fire near Old Newgate Road. 187 to International Drive to Bradley Airport is your best bet as an alternate. And on 185, accident with injuries getting over Simbury Mountain. So Route 185 at Cobtail Way is going to be all backed up in that area. 2 West, you're at a crawl through Glastonbury. More slowdowns into the Founders Bridge. 291 West is heavy across the Bissell Bridge span. In Bethany, a crash cleared Route 69 at Gaylord Mountain Road. I'm Cindy Waitman, and this report is brought to you by the Governor's Prevention Partnership and Purdue Pharma. Most people who abuse opioids don't have a prescription. Never take opioids unless prescribed by a doctor and only take exactly as directed. Sponsored by the Governor's Prevention Partnership and Purdue Pharma. Our next traffic update is coming up at 8:34 on the Talk of Connecticut.
I have a question. When the time comes for you to purchase a memorial for a loved one, would you rather speak with a commissioned salesperson or with the person who is actually going to design and manufacture that memorial? The answer is obvious, and that's why you need to call the wonderful family team at Zocco Memorials. No matter if you're Catholic, Jewish, Protestant, Zocco Memorials proudly serves all faiths, and the person you consult with will be directly involved in the creation of your memorial. And you won't believe the quality and beauty of their finished products. Your loved one deserves something worthy of their memory. Wouldn't you agree? Zocco may not be the biggest place around, but they are definitely the best. Visit Zocco Memorials on Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield or online at ZoccoMemorials.com. Zocco Memorials, creating a lasting memory. Final segment of our special broadcast on what's going on, this opioid crisis. And we're talking with Joe Ranazzisi, who really was the whistleblower in all of this as far as the DEA having its hands tied, legislation, the Marino bill. Joe, how about Big Pharma? How about lobbying groups? How much was put money-wise into getting this passed?
Well, we know that if you go on a website like Open Secrets, you could see exactly how much money was being sent from the industry into Congress. But I don't know the exact figure, but it's millions and millions of dollars to get this bill passed.
And as I understand it, this bill was introduced on the floor of the House a couple of times and didn't pass on its own. Is that right?
Well, in 2014, the bill was initially introduced. We were opposed to the bill. We made it very clear through written documents and in interviews or in briefings that we were opposed to the bill. We explained that it would destroy our ability to go after these large corporations upstream, and Congress listened to us at that point in time, and the bill never made it to a vote. And during that time period was when I was accused of threatening Congress, because I basically, they asked me for my opinion. I said the bill would be protecting defendants in our investigations, and why would you want to protect defendants in our investigations? After that, we had a change in leadership in 2015, and once the change of leadership took effect, I was ultimately removed, and my whole staff was removed, all my senior people. And that point in time, there was no one to oppose the bill. And then the bill got reintroduced, and it was passed in 2016.
Now, when you say removed, you were dismissed from the government?
No, I retired. They removed me from my position as deputy assistant administrator.
Mm-hmm.
They brought another guy in, and they said, well, just find a place and we'll figure out what we're going to do with you.
And do you believe your removal was because of your opposition to this bill?
I think that there was other things. There was industry did not like the way we were investigating violations, and they thought we were putting a little too much pressure on them. And I think there was just a lot of pressure to get rid of the people who were conducting investigations. I had the best attorney/regulatory drafter in government. I had the best regulatory guy overseeing the regulations, and I had the best criminal guy overseeing the criminal investigations. So I had the three best guys that could possibly be in those positions, and they were all subsequently transferred or removed after I was. And the only thing I could figure is that industry didn't like the way we were doing business, so they got to somebody and we just changed course.
We mentioned the small town in West Virginia. We mentioned some of these small towns in Florida. Has there been an uprising in those states over this? Any kind of an outcry?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the best thing going right now is that the states are taking matters into their own hands. And I think it's if the states need to take matters into their own hands, because the bottom line is that the government is not being hurt by this. The individual states and the people who live in those states are being hurt by this. So the states need to rise up, and the states need to go after these companies. And that's what they're doing throughout the country. I know there's a multi-state cooperative going on. I know that some of the AGs are on their own, doing their own thing, and I know others are contracting out, but the states need to handle this, because obviously the government doesn't want to upset these large corporations, and the government's not feeling the pain. The states are feeling the pain, and quite frankly, I'm just tired of people dying. I talk to parents that lose kids or have kids that are in rehab for the second and third time, and now the message is, oh, it's heroin and pharmaceuticals. It's heroin and fentanyl. Well, the problem is you wouldn't have heroin and fentanyl if you didn't have a pharmaceutical problem. And heroin and fentanyl are symptoms of our pharmaceutical problem. We need to address it. And if the government doesn't, the states are going to have to do it. And God bless the states for doing it.
What message would you give to a Coalition for a Better Wallingford, which, as I understand, was very persistent in getting in touch with you? We've got them in our studio here this morning.
First of all, anybody who knows me knows that I used to, when I was working with DEA, I went out and talked to the coalitions all the time because I think the coalitions were the foot soldiers and the conscience of the communities. And I want to thank Ken and the members of the board for creating the coalition and making it strong. Those coalitions need to continue. And the work there, they're the ones that go unnoticed, and they should never go unnoticed because they're the best. And I said to Ken, anytime anything you need from me, I'd be more than happy to come out and help you guys out. Those coalitions are the conscience of the community, and they need to stay in place and continue to do what they're doing.
And in an ideal world, what should the federal government be doing in this situation?
Repealing the bill and making corrections on certain statutes so DEA could tighten up the ability to control the drug in the marketplace a little better so we don't have shortages of one drug and too much drug in another area. There's so many different things that we could do to make the situation better. And I think there's a couple of senators now that are looking at the quota program, 21 U.S.C. 826, and how to change that. If you change quota, the way we issue opioid quota, Schedule 2 and certain Schedule 3 drug product quota, at that point in time, you'll have a better understanding of what's going into community and where it's going. The other thing that I've always been a proponent of is allowing states to have transactional data. So the states, the State Board of Pharmacy or the law enforcement agencies could see how much drug is going downstream and into the communities. That transactional data used to be available to states on a limited basis. It should be available. All of the transactional data should be available to the states. That way they could monitor what's going into their state and they could appropriate the amount of resources necessary to control it.
Ken, Mr. Mayor, Craig, Ernie, anything you have for Joe before we wrap up this segment?
Joe, I'll just say I salute you. It takes a lot of courage to come out and point out what's wrong, and you're one of the finest citizens I've had the privilege to talk to. Well done.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for doing all you do.
Joe, thank you very much for being a Ken, you wanted to add something? Go ahead, quickly.
No, just a thanks, and I'm looking forward to an ongoing relationship with you, Joe, bringing you up here to Connecticut, because this is just the beginning. We're going to make some of these things happen, and we're going to do it with your help.
Well, thank you, and thank you for helping us with that, Bill. Just thank you for everything you do.
Joe, thanks so much for being a guest, and I'm sure we'll talk down the line. You be well.
Okay, you do the same. Take care.
Thank you, too. Take care. We have about 2 minutes left. What should the state of Connecticut be doing right now? Let's go around the tables, and we'll start with you first, Craig Turner, who is the director of Wallingford's Youth and Social Services.
So there are two issues that we would like to see happen more aggressively. One is doctors being informed about what the new laws are that directly affect their prescribing habits and their reporting habits. That would be very important. So for those of you who may not know, one of the more recent laws that passed limits the number of days that a first prescription can be. 7 days is the maximum at this point. The other piece that physicians are required to do is if they're going to give 3 days or more of a prescription in a patient that comes into their office or to the hospital, they are supposed to go into the system that the state has set up and check the history of that particular patient's recent use or recent prescriptions to determine what their pattern of use is. And that's actually a law. The problem with that system, while that is a great model, there's no one at the other end of the stream, to use Joe's terms, to actually monitor that to determine if that's happening. So why is that important? Well, here's why. So if you prescribe drugs to my son and you haven't checked and you find out that he dies, something happens to him, we find out that, in fact, he was given drugs, opioids or another drug from another doctor, you're liable for a suit at that point because you did not do your due diligence to follow the law and actually check that out. At this point, there's no one to monitor or enforce that practice. Okay. That needs to change.
We are running out of time. Mr. Mayor, 10 seconds. Anything you'd like to add?
Encourage every person to be well aware of these concerns and be careful with any kind of prescription.
Ernie, 10 seconds.
Learn how to dispose of these medications properly. There's a lot of information online. The DEA has it. The FDA has it.
Ken.
I'd like everybody to go to our website, cbwlfd.org. There's a wealth of information. It talks about the programs we have. If you're in a community where you're not doing a hope and support group, we can help you start one.
We're out of time during this segment. Back with Vinny Aspromonte. Keep it tuned right here.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster.